from currently notesecurity.com. I have to apologize for the delay. I also have to apologize for my colleague, Chris Goggins, whose plane just now got in a couple of minutes ago. So he will not be presenting with me today. He will be presenting with me again at DEF CON. So if you want to catch him then. And I think it's the second day of DEF CON that he'll be up here with me, and we'll be talking about all this, and probably he'll have a couple of extra things to talk about. So we're going to just kind of skip over some of the things he was supposed to speak about. Give you a real quick introduction about myself. I used to formerly be with a company called Trust Factory, which was a company I helped co-found. I have recently left Trust Factory in pursuit of other career ventures at this time. Chris has actually had founded a company called Security Design International, who I've been externally involved with in regards to Lotus Notes security. We've been collaborating on several different issues regarding Lotus Notes security. How many of y'all actually attended DEF CON last year? How many of y'all actually saw our presentation last year? Okay. We're going to be talking about a lot of the same stuff. The reason we're doing a repeat of a lot of this stuff primarily is because last year we followed a policy of limited disclosure. Can you turn the gain down on the mic a little bit? I hear a little bit of a whine on it. Last year we followed a policy of limited disclosure regarding the vulnerabilities that we discovered. I have to make another apology in that this year we were actually going to be ready to go with full disclosure. The reason we've made the decision to go with full disclosure is it's been a year now. We've given Lotus a lot of time to get their butt in gear. Unfortunately, the issues have been kind of dropped by Lotus. And I don't mean to harp on some of the guys. I know that there's a lot of politics that go in a very large company like IBM and Lotus and trying to get this stuff fixed. Maybe that's not an excuse. I'm not going to get into that. But this is what we've got. Unfortunately, because of my change of employment status or my involvement with my company Trust Factory, we weren't quite ready with everything to go with full disclosure. In other words, the tool which we demonstrated last year, Sesame, we were supposed to have it ready, updated with the latest releases. We didn't quite get it. But it will be on the websites that you'll see at the end of this presentation within 1 to 2 weeks. So you'll be able to go on there. You can download it. You can play with it. Try not to do any damage to any other servers that are not yours. And I have to emphasize this. Because this is actually a reason that I actually left Trust Factory. My partner got a little carried away. And that was something I felt really, really, really strong about. Full disclosure, I feel very strong about. But at the same time, you know, do this stuff, do it in your laboratory. Don't be doing this stuff on other people's servers. I've already heard about one person who's actually gotten into a Domino's server either yesterday or today. You may have heard about this. You shouldn't be doing that. It's really, really bad. Nobody needs to go to jail over this stuff. So, anyway, that's enough of my philosophy. All right, as I said, after our initial presentation, Lotus really left all this stuff out. They promised to leave it up for a period of a year. I actually have a fax from Lotus that promised this, and unfortunately it got left up there for about 2 or 3 months and they pulled it down very quietly. This really did an injustice to everybody who was running Lotus Notes and Domino. So I'm going to do this one more time, and this is going to be the last time that we're going to be doing it Black Hat and DEF CON, lest we come along and stumble across something else. But I really have to harp that if you're a consultant out there, you need to call all your clients and discuss this with them. Tell them that they're running insecurely. We've actually done some statistics, some loosely based statistics, and currently right now we're seeing about 80% of all Domino servers out there, which are running with a web configuration, running as a web server, are extremely insecure. You can just go out there, pull some of this data out. You can pull out notes ID files. You can pull out all the information of these notes databases. And this, there's nobody that's excluded from this list. Everyone from Department of Defense, military sites, nonprofit organizations. If you were paying attention about 3 months ago, Robert Sullivan of MSNBC did an article in which the California Democratic Party actually was running a Domino server, and all the campaign contributions were fully viewable online on this Domino server. We talked about that 9 months prior at DEF CON. Nobody's listening. So I'm going to try to do this one more time, and I hope you guys really take this seriously. Now, there's been a few changes since this last year. Last year when we did this, there were 50 million corporate users. There's now over 70. 20 million. We've had an increase in 20 million users of notes. This is serious. A new version of RNext, that's what it's actually called. The beta versions are out now. I haven't even started to mess around with that. But in regards to what Lotus Notes is, I'm sure all you know about it, so I'm not going to harp on all this. It's up on the screen if you're one of the few in this room who isn't familiar with it. And as we said last year, these are all the different industries which are actually using Lotus Notes. So I'm going to race through this. If I'm going to ask, and I mean this, if I go a little bit too fast, I'm going to ask you to raise your hand and ask me to slow down a little bit. Some of this is a little bit redundant, and I don't want to bore you with this if you've seen one of our past presentations. In terms of client support, well, it runs on just about everything. In Release 5, they lost the clients on the Unix platforms. Something worth mentioning, Lotus is starting, because of IBM's involvement with Linux, we're starting to see more and more Linux support for client type of applications. Netscape 4.7 is actually now supported interface for Linux desktop users. There's actually a same time Java client. It may become a possibility where we'll see Linux supported as a desktop again. On the server platforms, you've got all these platforms. They've added OS 400, OS 390. All right, so why are we doing this again? IT versus farming. This is a little thing that we got a little creative last couple of months ago. I see a couple of familiar faces in Europe. Security is very much like a vaccination. And if you've been over there in Europe and seeing some of the stuff going on, one of the things that happened, and I think everyone's pretty much familiar with this, was that everyone kind of has had a complacent attitude towards BSE, foot and mouth disease in Europe. And I'm not trying to harp on the British or anything, but the government really had a complacent attitude. We'll control it, you know, it's not that serious. Before they know it, they're having to cull, you know, hundreds of thousands of animals for, you know, purely economic reasons. The damage of that's devastated the United Kingdom. Their tourist industry is shot to hell. Do we want to see this same type of thing happen on the internet? Right now, e-commerce, the future of e-commerce is starting to look vague. It wasn't like this last year. But nobody's taking these types of issues seriously, so I'm having to harp on this a little bit. So to try to illustrate this point, we try to compare it with vaccination, farming and vaccination, to computer security and Lotus Notes and Domino. This is really, really a critical issue. Well, I'm glad to hear you're paying attention a little bit. Really, I mean, the more and more, right now I watched on Tech TV just yesterday morning, and they were saying that somebody's nodding their head, so I see somebody else saw this. They took a poll in regards to you know, trust, you know, how well people trust the internet, security on the internet, privacy on the internet. And it was something like 83 or 87% of all the people polled were actually saying that they want to see government regulation on the internet because none of the private companies are taking this seriously. Now, here was an interesting fact that kind of while they were talking, they mentioned it, but it was just kind of pushed off to the side. Something like 75% of all those people who participated in that poll had incomes of $30,000 or less. So obviously the people who are pushing for this regulation are not actually the people who are you and I doing this consultancy out there, you know, working in the IT industry, doing development, doing security. You know, there might be a few of you guys here might be underneath that bracket, that income bracket, but generally I think the reality is most of these people are not aware. They're not aware of the issues. They've stuck Windows 90 on there because Bill Gates told them it was the best thing out there. They're running, you know, whatever applications because that's what they've been told to buy. They're not technical. They don't understand this. And if we allow security to really, if we don't take this seriously, if we don't take, you know, the California Democratic Party's website seriously, the credit card numbers which were listed on there, if we don't take that seriously, the whole e-commerce, you know, the future of e-commerce is going to go down the drain because no one will use it. So if we take a look here, mathematically, the risk times damage, well, you can pretty much figure this out. I'm not going to get into all this. I said I wasn't going to harp on this anymore, so I'm going to try to hurry on. Again, I have to hit on this. Sorry. There's a lot of security consultants here, and I'm not trying to bash anybody who's not technically competent in a particular platform or not. But I often see security consultants who get out there, and they may have special talents on Unix. They may have special talents on NT. They might have special talents on Lotus Notes Domino. But if you get into an industry or into a client that you're trying to service, and you don't have special talents on that, try to find somebody else who you can source out, you know, that job, contract it out to somebody else who actually has the talent. Quite often I'll see somebody out there who's got talents in one area and they'll try to fib on the other. They'll say they're totally competent on, you know, HTTP protocols and all that, but they're running a Domino web server. And the consultant doesn't really know a whole lot about Domino.
I think your numbers are optimistic first time.
Are what?
Optimistic.
Optimistic? Well, I'm trying not to piss anybody off. But at the same time, I'm trying to get people motivated. You probably understand what I'm trying. Hopefully you understand the point I'm trying to make here. I mean, it's okay to say you don't know about something. You know, I'm not the greatest NT hacker. I know a lot about Unix. I know a lot about Domino. I'm not the greatest Windows hacker. That's just the reality. So if I actually had a job, I'd probably go off and get Hans here or somebody else. Well, sorry. I don't mean to insult Hans. Somebody else that I know, I would ask him, hey, who's a good NT guy? Let me source him out to my client. Take something off the top. But too often, egos get involved, everything else. And the client ends up on the short end of the stick. On the demand side, we have 80% who consider security a non-issue. They look at all of us and they think we're paranoid. We're conspiracy freaks. Seriously, after I did this presentation last year, I could count the number of clients I've actually picked up in Domino security on both hands in the last year. They look at me, no, Lotus Notes is the most secure platform. You know, why? IBM says that. They wouldn't say that because that would be a liability risk. Well, if you heard the luncheon guy talking, you probably heard, started talking about some of the space stuff and everything else. He's a little bit out there, but in some respects, some of the stuff he was actually on, my fiance is actually working at the European Space Agency now. So some of the stuff he's talking about, I'm familiar with. He's a little bit optimistic in when all that stuff will probably hit, as in regards to the timeline, or pessimistic, whichever your take is on that. But international conflicts, corporate espionage, ex-employees, heck, just, you know, people sitting around with nothing else to do. I'm sure all of you are familiar with even the most obscure non-public networks are periodically scanned 10, 20, 30 times a day. I've got a little web server running from my home, and I get average about 15 to 30 port scans a day, and I average about 3 or 4 hack attempts a day. And it's just a little freaking Apache web server. Big companies, though, are getting hit, you know, hundreds of times a day. And a lot of these are coming from the Far East. So we really have to take this seriously. But I'm preaching to the choir now. All right. How many are running a Domino server? How many have upgraded to the absolute latest version? Nobody? Nobody's running 508. You are? Congratulations, you just got won a book. I had to find an excuse to give this thing away. What's your name?
Name's Chris.
Chris?
Yep.
Everyone give him a round of applause. How many actually have a security PSPG implemented? PSPG, Policy Standards Procedures Guidelines. You get a good feeling in your heart, a good feeling on your keyboard. All right, if you don't identify these potential problems, somebody else is going to. Now, this was the second line, was actually why I was at Trust Factory. So, and if you think, there was actually, I saw an article. Did anyone see the article? Oh, I want to say it was on MSNBC. It was about 3 months ago, and it was about the executive director of a large, he was a financial comptroller of a large company, financial institution, who actually was trying to hack a honeypot server located on his network. Did anyone see that? If you go back, I think it's on MSNBC or CNN, there was a whole article. And I think I actually followed it from the HoneyNet Project website. Again, most of these hacks are coming from internally. 80% or greater. I mean, and the whole thing about this article was it was a financial director of a financial institution. And he was trying to get the lowdown on what the other directors were making. So he tried to break into a honeypot server. Of course, he didn't know the better. And got busted. All right, so being ill is not nice. This is the overwhelming feeling, and I mention this. This mainly is in here because I've done this presentation to a lot of potential clients, and I've tried to craft this whole presentation, and I would say the same thing to you. If you go out there talking to your clients, you have to equate this, you know, security. If you've gone out there, you've gone to talk to a client, and they look at you as you're presenting problems to them. Has anyone else had that? You know, they look at you and they're like, you know, you're just making more problems for us. We're trying to build this great e-commerce website. You're coming along and saying, you know, people are going to break in it. You're creating problems for us. I'm not creating the problem. I'm just identifying it. If you equate it to something like a role of a doctor and vaccinations, I found that you have a little bit more success in trying to get in there. And I want to share this with y'all so that maybe it can help some of you get in there. All right, I'm going to talk about the client side. I had actually intended to break this up. Chris was supposed to take care of this part, but I'm going to go ahead and try to cover it. Regarding the client side, we're going to talk about a couple of things with stored forms, execution control list. Everyone's familiar. Who's not familiar with execution control list? You are. You have no clue about what they are. Execution control list was something that Lotus Notes, Lotus had actually implemented in Notes after release 4.5. We started messing around with 4.5, and actually it was Oliver Berger that actually posted the first thing about it. I'm going to come back to that, but I will hit on that because that's later in my presentation. But execution controllist, the idea, the principal idea behind it was so that if you get code that's actually in a stored form or something, unless it's digitally signed with a known signature and you've granted access to it, it should not be allowed to execute. So the idea is, you know, just increase security. It will actually prompt you saying you have not declared that this signature is allowed to execute or perform various functions, whether it's getting an object outside of the notes environment, accessing the current window it's in, things like this. But we'll come up to it and I'll give you an example on this. And on the server side, we've actually had done, as I mentioned before, we'd actually done a couple of presentations and we'd talked to Jeff and we'd talked to the lawyer if it was actually ethical or not, if it was legal or not, and we went ahead and did it. And that was actually what we called creative surfing. And that was the process of where you can actually go onto Domino servers. A lot of the developers of Domino applications are not really competent security consultants or competent in regards to how the security of their application should be built. So we found that one of the things we could do is actually through specially crafted URLs, you could go up and extract information bypassing any authentication process in your web browser. And we called it creative surfing because it wasn't actually bypassing so much the authentication procedure, it just didn't prompt you for that. Because the applications weren't designed with a comprehensive security attitude, or the word evades me, but I think you know what I mean. So they would actually create views in there, which they would give you a default view that maybe you weren't supposed to access. But all the views behind the default view, they had not actually implemented a proper access control to. So you just, it didn't take a whole lot of brain power to sit here and look at it and think, well, that's the default view. But I know this is a database that contains listings of users. So I'll just type in users in the URL, and whoosh, here's your user list. All right, so we're going to move on here. Yeah, this was a breakdown of when we were supposed to divvy up some of this stuff. All right, anyone not familiar with the Notes database structure? You are. There it is. The Notes database structure can be defined into three subsets. You've got the data, you have the forms, and you have the stored forms. Do you see anything on there that you're not familiar with? Okay, then why'd you raise your hand? I'm sorry? Yeah, you've got the data, which is the structured data, HTML and rich text. The HTML was something that came out in release 5. Before that, you only had structured data and the rich text. The forms is just kind of like, you know, the same thing as a web form. It actually defines how the data is being viewed in a document. And the stored forms is very much, if you're familiar with Microsoft Word, Access, any of that stuff, it's kind of the same idea. You're taking a form and you're combining it with the document, and you're so that that document can be sent to another database, and it can be still viewed using the default form that the data was intended to be viewed with. And you use this mainly in database applications where you may not actually have the proper form defined on a different database. Am I explaining that well? Does everyone know what I'm saying? Okay. Give me feedback. Feel free to give me feedback here. I'm sorry? Move on. Okay. All right, I'm moving too slow. All right, stored forms. The purpose, yeah, here again, here's the purpose, as I just mentioned. Workflow applications, you see this a lot in document management systems. And this is something I still see today whenever I go in. Nobody has deactivated the stored forms for their mail file. And their mail file is receiving internet email. And over those internet emails, you can send stored forms. So it doesn't take a whole lot of brain power for me to actually send the stored form to a recipient, that stored form contains executable code, which as soon as he opens it, there's something called a post-open event in a notes database. And you, using that, you can actually get code to launch and execute your attachment.
So that would bypass the ECL?
Yeah. Possibly. There's ways around that, yeah.
Can you disable incoming email and still allow it to pop up?
You can actually disable the stored forms to receive stored forms, but you still can send them. So that is possible. It's actually underneath the database properties icon. It's just a little check mark. I'll actually give you a look here. This is where it is. Allow the use of stored forms in the database. So if you turn that off, you won't be able to receive stored forms anymore. The problem where this becomes an issue is in regards to document applications, document management applications, third-party applications may make use of this. So you need to check with your notes developers and administrators if it's okay to turn this off on your mail file. If it's not okay, then you actually need to set up a different mailbox for internal email and a separate one for external email. So, and then you can use one, and you're all familiar with how to create little agents that as soon as one document arrives, it shoots off another email to your other email box. So at least you can stay in touch, and you know when you've got, you can manage both email boxes through one mailbox. Yeah? I'm sorry? No, I have not actually come across somebody. The question was, have I actually experienced a client or a customer, large company, who set up two separate email boxes, one for internal email, one for external? No, I haven't. Have you? But it's a good point. It doesn't actually, you can actually set it up so it doesn't consume a whole lot of extra resources on your note server to do that. Most people are not familiar with the problem so that they don't do it by default. Yeah?
Would it be possible for you to send a stop form to your SMTP gateway to stop?
Yeah. Yeah. He's saying yes, so I'm sure it is. Theoretically, yeah, it should be. I haven't actually tried it across something like CCmail. SMTP interface. I'm sure you probably could.
Yeah, I mean, that one of the things that you can do is the way that the message is transferred, you can actually flag some stored form message and it shows up as a separate member of the attachment or minor attachment.
Mm-hmm.
You can flag it out and you can pull that out right here. And start to take it. So that's a mitigating factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, one of the things I do is actually run, I've got a Domino server that I run, and I run PostFix in front of it. And when you send a stored form across SMTP, it actually gets encapsulated as an attachment called OND. So I've actually got PostFix looking for any stored forms coming across, and I just get rid of them. So, but yeah, you can actually send them out through probably a gateway, because you can have notes go ahead and talk to your gateway via SMTP. Doesn't prevent the internal. No, you're correct. And unfortunately, Lotus doesn't have a really good resolution for that.
It's almost as bad as Visual Basic Scripts for viruses.
Yeah. Yeah, what he's saying, it's almost as bad as Visual Basic Script. And it really is. It really is. All right, so I'll give you a quick demonstration. Has everyone seen this, actually? Anyone care to see it again? The stored form? You want to see it again? All right. All right, so I've got this user here. He's called Inbreaker. It's a Dutch for kind of the, yeah, it's pretty obvious even in English. It's just spelled in Dutch. That's the country I live in still. So we're going to go ahead and send a stored form. Excuse this, actually, this was actually from a different conference, but it's the same idea. So we're going to send it. We've got, hang on, let me go back before I do this. We've got another user here. On a different desktop, I'm going to show you his access control list. So we're going to set the default to no access and anonymous to no access. Let me explain this real quick for those who aren't keen on this. You've got an anonymous entry in your database. By default, it's actually not even there. I had to put that there. If you're a notes administrator, you may have had to put it there for all your users. If you haven't, shame on you. Anonymous is actually the ACL entry for any document or any type of access with no signature. So if it's coming across from the internet and there's no note signature associated with that, that falls under the category of anonymous. Default is typically reserved for anything that is not explicitly defined in this ACL, but is still within your notes domain. So I may not have Bob White defined in my ACL, but I could, since he's in my organization, I could actually set default to read or reader, and then Bob would have access to be able to read anything in my email. But right now I'm going to set this to everything to no access. Oops, sorry. So the only one which has access is this guy, Dutch. Hans, how do I say this? Slotoffer. All right. We did a presentation to a Dutch client. I actually used some Dutch names and didn't bother to change it. So let's go over here. Oh, real quick. Okay. So here's your execution control list. This is where I was actually talking about what is allowed to execute. You can actually define this for workstation security, and underneath that is all sorts of Lotus Notes code, Lotus script, anything that's underneath there. You also have different entries for Java applet security and JavaScript security. But I'm not actually going to touch really the Java on any of this. And again, you see the default and the no signature, and right now default is nothing is enabled under default. And almost nothing is going to be disabled under no signature. Whoops. So all those are clear here. Now what I'm going to do, so I'm going to log back in as the attacker. I'm going to go ahead, and I already have a little stored form here created. I'm actually, because Chris isn't here, I'm actually having to improvise, and this is actually going to be only an internal attack. If he brought his laptop, we would have actually done probably two different servers, so you could have actually seen this from an external standpoint. I'm short one laptop, so I'm going to have to improvise on this. But this also works if we were going across SMTP gateways. So we'll send this a and then doesn't make a difference what I type in here. So that's gone off. You can see there on the server, it's actually gone off and been delivered to the Dutch user. Switch over to this guy now. So there we have our new email. It says read me, and this could be from anybody. So as far as he's concerned, there's no attachment. There is no attachment here. We'll click on that. Oops. Where'd it go? Well, if this is probably a secretary or maybe your executive vice president of human resources, they're not technical. They don't understand, hey, I clicked on it and disappeared and nothing happened. Weird. Okay, never mind. That's probably going to be their response. Now, if we go back to the attacker, before we do that, what was that? There's an email in there that was actually delivered back to the attacker. So let's go back over here. There's an ACL update. So we've actually now have a URL. Now what this did was my code within the stored form actually went off because it was being opened and executed by the victim. The victim actually opened the stored form, so I got executed with his privileges. Those privileges just opened up his ACL on the server. So, and then it sends me back, the attacker, the information of where on their Domino's server. Now this, I have to be fully honest here. Not always will you see where somebody is running a Domino web server on a mail server. But there is often on a Domino web server mail-in databases where similar types of things can also occur. So these mail-in databases will actually open up emails for post-process, for some sort of processing of automatic responses. Maybe it's a mailing list. So I can still have that executed without the user intervention. And it will send me this back, a URL that I can click. And since it's opened up the ACL of his database, we can also see it across the web. And this is the nice integrated environment of Domino, which gives us, this is all straight out of his database. This is what you get with an integrated environment, because this is a feature. Lotus Notes actually, this, yeah.
I have a question, just to back a second.
Yeah. Notes will convert it back. Yeah. Yeah, it sure will.
What does that, the Domino server or the client?
The SMTP gateway, or the SMTP engine within the Domino server actually does this. There's actually a really good red book on how the SMTP engine actually works. And you can, if you go back there and you can actually read some of this stuff. It's a good point. If you'll actually, at the end, you'll see an email address. If you'll email me with your question, I'll shoot you the link to where the red book is. Yeah? So anyway, back to what I was saying, this is actually a feature of Notes, and it is a useful feature. You can actually access your Notes email, your note through, all this is generated from your Notes database. But since now we've actually opened up the ACL, anyone can read it. And we can see this. Let me flip back. So if we look at the default and the anonymous, now in this demonstration, I actually modify both default and anonymous just for proof of effect. It's not actually necessary. The anonymous entry is there. I could have discriminately just chosen to modify that one and I would have full access to his database. But as you can see, it's got manager access as well as the default. And if we actually have a look at the log.
Could you have actually just added another?
We could have added another one, yes. You're completely correct. If you actually look here at the log on the access control list, you'll see it was the victim who performed the action. So it wasn't the actual attacker. And since we deleted the email, unless you've got some sort of really nice IDS which actually is making copies of all the incoming emails or some other mechanism, the traceability has almost all been eliminated.
Yeah, for the administrator, you sent an email to the administrator.
I'm sorry?
If you
Mm-hmm.
But you have access to other things besides just that administrator?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is one of the things we've theorized. Never actually sat out and done it for almost fear of just, you know, arming script kiddies. But this alone means it's totally possible, because his question, I don't know if you heard it, was if we had sent this email to an administrator, could we have done other things? We sure could have. One of the things we could have actually done, and we had played around with it last year, was send a stored form attack, which not just does this, but actually goes in the names and address book and performs lookups. Lookups of who's the president of the company. Who's the financial controller? And it's actually not part of this presentation, that we've done it in times past. We actually had a little program called eMoney. If you're familiar, most people in the banking world, at least within Europe, typically will run applications like ReflectionX. So we could have actually incorporated code in there to launch a little program which just sits there and waits for ReflectionX to launch. Once it does, we continue to wait. We sit around and wait for the person to log on to a server, some sort of Unix, VMS, whatever, server, and we start recording all his keystrokes. And once they walk away, we detect some sort of inactivity for a couple of minutes. It goes off and quietly sends all the information that they just did in ReflectionX back to us. And there's actually, it's not part of this so much of Domino security, but there's a nice little function, ReflectionX, which crypts the password. And if you've really played around with that, that's all Visual Basic enabled, and you can actually dump that password back out to the console, the hash, using the ReflectionX call. Mm-hmm. Where I access through the browser?
Did you access it through the browser? That's what I was.
Okay, you ask it again, I'm sorry.
On the link, you brought up the browser.
Yeah.
You didn't go through the client, you went through the browser.
Yeah, I went through the browser. That was actually, if you look at the URL.
So if you're requiring HTTP IAC passwords, how would you get prompted for an IAC password?
Because we've set the access control list so that Anonymous has a manager entry. And when Anonymous is everything that doesn't have any types of note signature to it. So that is the lowest form of access.
So you can't turn Anonymous off a web server?
Not really, no. No, there's. I don't know of any way you really could, unless I'm overlooking something, which might be a case, but we're all human. But yeah, back to what I was saying, like the ReflectionX, we could capture all this stuff on a terminal, some sort of video terminal, and send it back to us. And then using ReflectionX, since it's ActiveX, we could send back more macros, which we now know the prompts of the Unix system or the VMS system. We could send back another application, another little application, does the same thing, waits for Reflection to start. Once the user's logged on or whatever, actually we don't even have to really wait for it because we now know his password and log on, it would execute whenever it was able to determine that the screensaver was activated, and then it would launch. And we did this in our lab, and it pretty well works. So, yeah, you could email the administrator or somebody else and perform all sorts of other activity. If you want to see something like that, I can actually set that up after this, and I'll play around and show you how it works. So, okay, let's move on. All right, I mentioned a minute ago that this was all discussed back in 1996 by Oliver Berger under Spiegel magazine. And this is where Lotus responds with the ECL on R4.6, it should be, sorry. 5 years later, in 2001, very few, the default of the ECL is still pretty much wide open. Nobody really understands it. Nobody wants to touch it. It's a very good point, because you have the administrator ECL and you have the user ECL. And most people don't even know where the administrator ECLs actually manage from. So almost everyone also allows stored forms, as I previously mentioned. All right. So yeah, this is pretty much what we've just gone through. I got ahead of my slides. All right, here's something else, which is, I don't know if anybody knows this. I'm going to just stop here real quick. The execution control list, even if somebody else has set up an ECL, this is a really good way to reset the ECL. You can actually, there's various ways to do it, but you can actually add code to modify the notes INI file. And if you set up this, add this, the ECL setup equals 3, it'll reset your ECL the next time the user launches his notes client. The refresh ECL is also another good way. If you just leave all the entries blank, this worked, I believe it was up to 502 or 503, the refresh ECL, and then Lotus finally removed this. But most people aren't running 503 or later. You gotta make sure everybody's really upgraded to the recent releases. All right, the other thing is that the API calls are not intercepted by the execution control list. And since OLE and the COM environment uses the notes environment or the notes API, there's another way around this. And one of a very simple way around this is actually, let me shut this down again and go back to my client. What I've got here is a little HTML file, which is called Pretty Women. And within here, you can see I'm actually have encoded some OLE calls in the HTML code. And what this is going to do is once I attach this and send it in an email, I really wish I had a wireless mic trying to do this with one hand. A little bit difficult. So we put the attachment of the HTML file, and this could be anything really. But this will just give you a really nice example on how this actually works and what the implications are. So what we're going to do now is we're going to pop this open in the victim again. And instead of actually, since this is an HTML file, we're going to open this locally. It's not going to access the notes server directly. It's going to access the notes server through the API interface of the client. And to give you a demonstration of this, I think this will become clear as soon as I open this. What we'll do is we'll just actually click on launch. And here again, okay, now here's something interesting. I want to point this out. I'm not, as I mentioned earlier, I'm not a fantastic Windows hacker. So things like Microsoft Office and all that, Loft and other guys have some really great information on how to get around this. But this is just actually a little warning here. It says after clicking on the OK button, you will receive an active X warning from your browser. In order to see the results properly, you should click on Yes. So since everyone wants to see their pretty women on in their emails and everything else, they're of course going to click Yes. Here's our official Internet Explorer Active X warning. And what I've now done is actually gone in, to give you a comparison, you'll actually see that I'm pulling back. Okay, the order is reversed, but the information I'm actually retrieving from here is actually through the Notes API. And this is not intercepted. The Notes API calls are not intercepted by the execution control list. And this is something, again, we said to Lotus, this is broken. This is, you've got to fix this. And yet nothing has actually happened on this. So everything that's come through here in your browser has come through the Notes API.
To help out the social engineering, is Notes the same way as like Outlook and stuff where you can actually put a person's name in quotes that would show up, but like someone they would know, but actually in the real email address part, it would be from the outside world? Because like
Outlook
Express, you put in the brackets.
Oh, yeah.
A name, and it has a real email address, but Outlook only shows the fictitious name or the name you put down.
Yeah, that's Notes is just as vulnerable to that as everything else. Yeah, and did everyone hear the question? Yeah, no.
You want here. To make it look like an external email.
Is talking to this so they can hear you.
Oh, well, like Outlook, you can put in. I think it's left bracket, right bracket.
Yeah.
Inside left bracket, right bracket, you can put any name in there. You can say you're whoever.
Spam people do this a lot.
Yeah, you can say whatever you want. And then actually the true email address after the right bracket is the real email address that's going to go back out. So when you actually open it up into Notes, it looks like it may be from an internal person.
Or even yourself.
Or even yourself or whatever else. And then when you click on it, and execute this stuff, it actually sends the email back to the original email person, but because no one looks actually into the headers or anything like that to see where it's really going, they don't care.
That's a good point. Should we actually incorporate this into this? Because this, yeah, so this way you would actually see, and you get this a lot from spam users, and you would actually see, again, email, and it says it's from yourself. And so you look at it and you think, what the heck, you know?
CEO or
somebody else.
They open it up. We want them to open it up.
Yeah. The username, password for what?
To log on to the server to retrieve the information.
What I just did here in the browser?
Yeah.
Well, you're already logged on as the user.
So we're doing it in backup.
Because since you're logged on as the user, everything which you've when you've authenticated with the ID file, you don't actually authenticate with the server. You're authenticating with the ID file, and then that creates a session with the Notes server. Once you have that established, you have to have that to be able to open your email. Once you have that open, then anything is free reign within the API calls.
And VBScript.
Yeah, it's a little VBScript embedded into HTML.
So that's a Windows call.
It's actually a Windows call into the Notes API. So this is all the same material, the basic. Foundation for the same types of things that we've seen on Outlook. Bubble Boy, Melissa, all this is completely possible within Notes. And everyone who's running Notes within a corporate environment typically has the attitude, well, I run Notes. I've actually seen reporters say, well, we run Notes, so we don't use Outlook, so we're not vulnerable to any of these attackers.
Well, when you open up the attachment, but it's in Outlook, it's just in the preview box. As soon as you hit the message, it
executes. There's a preview box in Notes.
Yeah, but it's not going through Internet Explorer to execute
the... True. So for this, no.
If no, you I'm, don't click on the attachment that opens up Internet Explorer, then you become vulnerable.
Right. But with the stored form, there's what you could...
that's an improvement that people will click on the attachment anyway.
Yeah.
Well, social engineering, that's what I'm saying. Not even social.
Yeah, I still have problems with my mom. She's sending me executables. Hey, Kevin, look at this. I'm like, Mom, don't be doing that. All right, so I'm going to move on. I'm dragging my butt here, I know. Let's go on through this. All right, the password hashes. This has still not been fixed. I have heard through the grapevine that in the next release this is actually going to be fixed. I've yet to see it in the beta. I'm sorry?
They said so.
So, again, whoops, what did I just do? Again, the password hashing is based on an RC4 implementation. It's a modified RC4. All the stuff is static. Lotus did not, they did not learn from Unix. They did not learn from the SMB hacks with NT. They're just now, I'm not sure if they've learned from our last year's presentation on this, so since it's not actually in the beta yet. All this stuff is static. Those are the hashes for those words. And one of the things that I actually did, and I forgot to actually check to see if I've got it. Let me have a quick look. I actually created a database.
This is an automated tool that does a lot of software.
I'm actually working, just started working with another guy. His name is actually Coaxial Karma, and he's taken a lot of the stuff that we did last year and started modifying it. And he's got a brute force DLL that he's working on right this minute. One of the things I actually did, I don't see it here, is I took a database and just created a whole bunch of static entries of hashes. Things like just password, username combos, and I took an address book from a client and went through and checked it and compared it using this Notes database. And just using static passwords off the username combos and things like password and a couple of well-known words, I came up with like 5% of these passwords in their address book. That was really no effort into that. It wasn't my intention to really create a brute forcing tool, dictionary attack. But that gives you some sort of idea of how the passwords are being chosen on Notes environments, not very securely. Yeah. Oh yeah. One of the big things, and if I can hurry up here and get on, that we've continually seen is name and address books, because a lot of people run, or more and more I'm seeing of, that people are running LDAP servers on their Domino's servers. They're not securing their name and address book. They don't understand how to secure their name and address book and still be able to serve it through an LDAP server. So if they've got a web server on top of that, you can totally pull their password hashes from there.
Through the stored form, if you send it to an administrator, can you send out the username and the hashes out of the database and send it back to you?
I'm fixing to show you that. This is, let me go back. Now we sent that HTML code. There's something else that I did not get to show you yet. Let's go back to the attacker. Now this actually occurred in the background, but the user didn't see this. If we pop this open, this is the attacker, what the attacker got back after we sent the HTML document to the victim. We've got his ID file, the victim's ID file. We have his password hash. We have actually where his mail database is located on the server, and we have his ID file path. So if we need to go back and download it across a web server or something else later on, we can do that. So using this, we now have, since we have his password hash, the next thing I'm going to show is Sesame. Has anyone not seen Sesame? Okay. So let's go ahead and detach. This, we'll just go ahead and act like we don't have access to the victim here. I should have brought a mouse. This is too hard using these touchpads. So we're going to pop this open. I'm going to launch Sesame here. Since we have his pass, okay, hang on real quick. We're going to copy and paste his hash here. This is what we just received back in the email. Okay, did y'all catch that, what I just did? Okay. Okay, let me go back. I should have actually backed up and should have explained that as I was going through it. Let me clear the session out here. I'll go back and I'll switch to the user ID. Now, I just attached the ID file, which is down here on the left, right there. That was the victim's ID file right there. So I'm going to pick this. Now I'm pretending I'm the attacker. So we're going to switch to that. Since I actually copied the hash, which I received from the mailback document, I've got that in my clipboard.
I understand all of that, but the actual hash itself, what is that? Because that would be the actual hash.
Well, when I actually emailed the document, the HTML document, There was Visual Basic Script that was embedded in that.
So the idea of hash cube, what exactly is that hash? Is that something?
That's a good question. The hash actually came from the name and address book from the HTTP entry. I'm sorry. I lied. The hash actually came from a memory location in his session. When he authenticated, it stores his password that he entered in, stores that in a hash form. It's a modified RC4 hash that's up in the live RAM. We actually pulled that using the Notes API calls, stuck that back in an email back to me, sent that back to me. I now, since I have it, both his hash from his memory and his ID file, I have that in a document. Using Sesame, I can detach his ID file, and I can use Sesame to plug in the hash that I actually got and use that hash to authenticate against the ID file.
Are you plugging it into your memory?
Right, Sesame. Precisely. Sesame just takes through and actually goes and plugs that back into my memory so I can authenticate.
And that memory location is fixed?
It's fixed. It's static. This is the problem. This is what they're supposed to fix in the next version. I'm sorry?
Fixed location, fixed length, right?
Yes. Yes, fixed length, yeah. That's what's in Sesame, and I did not get time. That's why I was saying at the beginning of this, I have not had time to actually update it to the latest releases of Notes. And every version, every minor release version, it's a slightly different place in memory. You can use some sort of hex editor that can view your memory.
Since RC4 should give you a very random reading, it's just a random string.
Since it's a static hash, you can actually just go right through there and find it in your memory. So I just have not updated Sesame yet. I haven't had time to sit down and do that because I have to go through each minor install, but it'll take me a couple of hours to set it all up.
Are you saying that by dumping the hash into the database process before you actually log on, you can then log on with a password?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear all of that.
I'm just wondering, normally the hash will be generated once you dump the password and you are authenticated.
Mm-hmm. With that hash. Let me show you again real quick. Let me start over. Trying to do this with one hand is kind of hard and talk at the same time. So let's go back into the Inbreaker. Okay, so we have the document here that we got received. I'm going to copy and paste this hash. And I've already detached that to my desktop. So now I'm still the attacker, and I'm going to switch the ID file to the victim's ID file that I just received back in the email. It is actually there in that directory, but I just want to be consistent here. Okay, so there, I've got the prompt for his ID file. Now, if I actually come over here and launch Sesame, okay, and I click on the password button here, and type in the new hash. The hash it's actually displayed is from my previous session as the attacker. So I paste in the new one, and I can set this to whatever. Actually, why don't you come up here? Come on up here.
It's just a password.
It's just a password, but I'd like for you to come up here and see this. Because I actually want somebody's involvement here. So you can verify this. Okay. Type in whatever password you want right there.
Well, I'll do a difficult one. ABC.
Okay. Click OK. Okay. Now type your password, what you just typed in right there.
Okay.
There you go. Now what's happened is Sesame took the hash that we had entered in there, it searched for that memory in the static location, identified it, created a new hash for ABC, and stuck that right there on top of it.
That's
yeah? Yeah. Since it's a static location for every version. Yeah.
I don't understand why they don't fix it, because it could prevent
the reason.
It's actually the same thing when you're using a cloud, which are really big companies with really lots of cloud, and you just crush them. They would have to admit that they did something wrong.
The excuse they gave us last year after we did this presentation last year was make sure I say this right. You have to have physical access to do this. That
you don't have to, because you just remotely got all this information.
But you, to them, they feel that you still have to have physical access to perform this. But that was the HTML thing was something we came out right after we did the presentation last year.
That's
is in response to that.
Physical access there.
Well, that the HTML. They didn't see that because we didn't have that last year at DEF CON. So that was we came up with that in response to their excuse why they didn't consider it a serious issue. They did consider it an issue, just not a prevailing one. Serious enough to...
The CEO just popped into his email box.
I'm sorry?
To the internal users, they're saying it's okay for the internal users.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no.
Which process do you write the hash to, and in which context does it write? Does it write in the user context or more privileged
context? You lost me.
When you write the hash, you write into
yeah.
the process memory. So what process is that?
The NL notes process.
Yeah, but it still should be user executable.
Yeah.
You're the user running it, so you have access to all that memory.
Yeah, this is just...
Yeah,
it's yeah. This is Windows. Well, this is Windows Millennium, but yeah, it's just user context.
Under NT, you can.
And this works under NT.
The process would deny users from writing to the process.
You're working on the client side. You're talking about someone under the administrator on my block.
We haven't touched the server.
No, but it can be that.
No,
yes.
I'm an administrator on the box. If I'm not a client, I can have access to anything I want to because I'm just the administrator. I can get system access, I can get the system level access on my box.
No, it's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that you can configure processes as a programmer so that when it stands up, you can deny people from writing to the memory of the process. And you can select who has access to that. Yes?
Not if you're the administrator on the box.
administrator on the client.
There's no administrator under Windows 98.
But even
under NT, this works under NT. It will work under 2000. I actually have to change a little bit of code to make it work, and that's why I'm not ready to release it yet. Okay.
One last question.
Yeah, sure.
How related is the password hash to the pictogram that you see on the blog in front?
Well, that's just it. We actually had come up early, long time ago, and it's not even in this demo anymore, with a little VB executable which simulates that. And Lotus came back and said, well, you know, they use a special algorithm, which is true. We haven't been able to figure out what that algorithm is. Depending upon your key combos and the length and everything, that is specific to always for your password that you choose. And they say that the users should actually be familiar with where, when they stop typing in their password, what the icon combination is, so that they know that's an authentic graphical process. I haven't actually tried it, but I kind of doubt it. It varies. I mean, if you change one character in your password, it's going to come up with a whole different pictogram. But and I've never actually checked to see how many pictograms are in there. But maybe it's a good idea. Yeah. In the ID file? Yeah. He was asking if I've done any work on the format of the ID file, and it's basically it's just a little crap. What is it? It's actually an RSA algorithm that encrypts the ID file, and then once you decrypt it, it's very similar to PGP. If you're familiar with that, when your local identity file, your private key, sorry. Well, first you have to be able to decrypt the ID file first. I mean, the format is irrelevant until you can actually decrypt the ID file. I'm sorry?
Do you know where to start with the private key and public keys in the ID files itself?
Yeah, actually one of my colleagues had actually done more work on this ID file, on the structure of this, so I'd have to get back to you on that one. Yeah? Sure. Okay. So let's move on. I know some people are getting impatient. Okay, we've gone through all that with the ID files. How are we doing on time, guys?
We're already over?
Okay. All right, I'm on race through this real quick. All right, the access control list. Again, this is, you're all familiar with this, so I'm not going to hit any of this. There's 58 up to 58 possible databases out in the default installation. If you're not going back and auditing the actual ACLs of all these databases, you need to start doing that. A lot of them are wide open. And a lot of them are crucial. Quite often when you're staging Domino servers into production, developers and everything else will set things wide open. One of the most important ones, the names and address book, the catalog, the DOM log, and the log. There's 54 others. The catalog is a very interesting database. Since we're running short on time, I'm not going to do it here, but if you want to see it afterwards, come up and see me. I've got a script. I've actually got to go talk to the guy from Nessus who also is here. I wrote a script within Nessus which will go through there interactively on a Domino server running the HTTP process. And if the catalog database is open, I can find where everything, whether it's a part of the standard installation of Domino or third-party application, by just querying the catalog database. Because the catalog database is actually responsible for tracking where all the other databases on your Notes server are stored.
Is there any tools that can go through on the Domino server and give you what the access controller should be?
IBM has just recently come out with a tool for that. I've got a copy of it. If you want to see it, I'll show it to you in a little bit. It's an audit tool that you can run from a Notes client. It's actually a little database application. But you should also check it from the external standpoint of a web server as well. And that's one of the things my script does, and I'm going to release that along with everything else as a script for Nessus, if you run Nessus Security Scanner. But this really comes into play, because if you've got a third-party application and it's not secured and your catalog database isn't secured, you can find out where those third-party databases are. Within the catalog database also stores the information for all the access control list entries for each database. So you can really footprint which databases on that server to start plugging away at. Okay, this is something worth mentioning. A lot of people do not put passwords on the Notes server ID file. I cannot emphasize this strong enough. The directory traversal attack that came out against Domino, this really made things really fun because you could start retrieving ID files. Most people stick their ID file for a Domino server in the data directory, right along with all the other databases. And I've always tried to tell people don't do that, because in the case of the directory traversal, anything in the data directory, anything on that actual partition of the data directory, you could retrieve. This includes the ID file. If you don't have a password on that, and I can retrieve the ID file, it's pretty much a no-brainer for me to take off and create a new Notes server with your ID file, and all I have to do now is replicate with a different server, which is accessible over the internet, a dial-up, and I can just start pulling databases using that ID file. And your servers, your Domino servers, won't know the difference. And also, again, if you have locally encrypted databases on the server, I can also open those things as well using that ID file. All right, this is something regarding the HTTP server. There's more security problems with this, and this actually has to do with the URL syntax of the language. This is the basic structure of this to create these types of things. And this is where I was talking about to go off and create, be able to query for documents and different views. This is the basic structure. You have the host, of course, and the Domino object, which is usually the database that you're actually querying. After that, you have the view and then the document that you can manipulate to actually get the particular information you're wanting. And then you have the actions to perform on that. The varying different ones are the open database, open view, open document, edit, read entries. If you've done any Domino development, you're probably familiar with this. If you haven't, look at this carefully. Go through the help documents with Domino, find out how this works, and you can put two and two together, and you'll figure out how you can actually start just walking along and looking through notes databases on a server and extracting information that you would typically think should not be viewable.
Can you put access control lists on either through Domino to stop anonymous access to these?
It's a good question. What I was asking was, can you actually put access control lists on this to block particular commands? No. What you can do, like even in the case of the directory traversal, one of the things you can do is go into, if there's something in there that you don't need, you can actually create entries in the httpd.cnf file, which is a text file, and you can actually go in there and block things out within there. So you can actually block out any particular command. It will disable it for everything on the server. So the names and address book, I'm sure most of you are all familiar with this. I'm not going to go into all that. Again, if you've not gone through and not made sure upgraded all the HTTP hashes, does anyone not know how to do that? How to upgrade the HTTP hashes to the more secure format? No? Okay. I'll just give you a quick demo of this because this is really important. This is how we showed last year to retrieve all this information. Let me show you how this looks. Okay, this is just an average user, and here you see the internet password. And this is in the old format. And this is several versions, though this is also worth mentioning. In the profile document for your server, you have the option to use the stronger passwords. By default, that's broken in most releases of Notes. They were supposed to fix it in release 503, and then I saw again I was running a 506 server, and it's broken again. So I'm not sure exactly what happened there with Lotus on that. So in other words, when you went to use that by default, when you go off and create a new user, automatically uses the stronger hash by default. It doesn't work under like 506, 505 and 506. So what you have to do is you have to come down here and select which users you want to upgrade. And then you choose this option right here. Now, a little small word of warning. If you do this, there are a bunch of applications out there, web-based applications, which make use of the older hash for authentication purposes into other databases and other servers within like a cluster or something else. So if you actually upgrade to this, you may possibly break some third-party applications. So test it out before you upgrade all your users, before you go through and upgrade 2,000 users at once. Otherwise, you're going to have to go back and manually change. There is no automatic process to downgrade back to the weaker password.
But this still wouldn't prevent someone using Sesame and still changing the hash and putting it back in the...
It will prevent them from stealing the HTTP password directly from the names and address book.
That's not how you got it in the first place.
In the first place, in the first example, that's not how I got it, but that's only one of several methods to get it. A lot of people actually have, or run, like I said, they're running LDAP servers. They're maybe not properly configured, or just as a matter of good prevention, it's good to go ahead and upgrade all these if it's possible to the stronger password. You never know when somebody else is going to come behind you and set the name and address book to designer or something like that. So it's good to have those already secured, because using a browser, I can actually go off and retrieve the HTTP password hash as well, directly from the names and address book. So now if we actually look at, you'll see a different format, and it's actually upper and lower case characters. And if you see the upper and lower case characters, then that's actually the newer version. And each time you can take the same password and you'll get different hashes. It is a dynamic hash now. But this is only good for the name and address book. It has no bearing on what you were saying on your client. And the reason being is just because that's too fundamental into the client, how the client actually performs that authentication.
So even though the dynamicness of the password has changed, still it's still in the same area?
On the client. This part where it's actually storing the names and address book is only for web-based authentication. So if you've actually set this, somebody can go off and use a web browser to access their email. And it's also a good principle to actually use separate passwords for this HTTP hash.
But you can't take this hash here, represented here, and hook it into the client.
No, it won't work.
The old hash would, but this different hash won't.
Correct. So let's go on. So this is another thing. Let me put the mic down here for a second.
here with Internet Explorer.
Okay, let me show you something here real quick. I've got to free up my access control list. I've got to hurry because she just told me I've got less than 10 minutes now. I'm sorry for taking so long, guys. One of the things, here's what I'm talking about. If you've actually got reader access in the names and address book, we'll go in via with the browser, and you can actually see all the people's entries here, all the entries in the names and address book. If you actually open up a user, you can see that you can't actually see the password here. Now, if we actually, since I've got to hurry, I'm going to skip this. But if you actually go in here, and what I was talking about, the URL language, and enter in the user view, the dollar sign users view, this will give you all the user details, including the HTTP hashes. So this is a way around not being able to see that the information in the form. You can create a new view or access a different view which does present this information. And this is actually a bad design of the names and address book by Lotus. But you see this also in a lot of third-party applications. The server view does the same thing for you, including all the admins of the server and connections. All right, we're going to skip the demonstration since we're running out. So multiple vulnerabilities exist. There's all sorts of threats within the Notes environment. It is not a completely secure environment. And this is really ironic because a lot of people, it does meet the standards for the Department of Defense's defense messaging system. And so you see this in use within the CIA, the FBI. Last year we had somebody from Boz Allen who was interesting heckler in the crowd because he was very keen on Note security and the standards that it supposedly meets. I'm going to buzz through this and let you guys out of here unless there is something else I'm missing. I think everybody else is pretty keen on all this. Are there any questions about any of this? The presentation will be online. This is where it will be online. Everything will become accessible about a week from after this conference at these three URLs. And these should be in your presentation material. If they're not, just jot them down. I'm sorry? The Nessus script. I'm actually going, that's why I was saying I've got to talk to Renaud. Later today, and I've got scripts for all 58 databases that I'm going to be releasing for Nessus. There was somebody I noticed in the latest version that had incorporated one. I believe it was for the names and address book, but he'll have 57 then to add. So, and then you can run this through and do checks and everything else on Nessus. But it'll also be accessible from my website. Any questions? I'm sorry I was kind of dragging my butt there for a little while.
Have you looked at Groove at all?
No, I haven't.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the Aussie. Yeah. I haven't actually looked at it yet. Okay. Have you?
I work there.
Oh, okay. Okay.
What was your question?
He asked if I'd looked at Groove, which is Ray Ozzie's latest project. It's, I believe it's, is it Z?
Peer-to-peer platform.
Is he really targeting to replace Notes or compete with Notes or?
The contract's complicated.
Okay.
Yeah. No, of course not.
I've only had a brief look at the website. I haven't actually played with the program at all. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, guys. Y'all are free to go.